I'm the sexy baby.
Okay, that's good.
Wah, stop. Put nope. a dick in me.
We're done. We're done.
Wah, I'm nope. sexually mature. I have genitals.
Nope, we're done. Pack it up. We're going home. Hang on. Can we talk about Boss Baby for
please?
Wait, so we haven't even talked about Rock Dog at all yet.
No, we haven't. We also talked about Rock Dog.
Can we talk about Rock
but
Dog?
But Boss Baby. Okay, so the Boss Baby trailer, it's about...
Is
like, it's
stupid?
Yes, okay, but that's not my point. My point is that it's about, like, these parents who bring home a new baby, for the kid, like, their younger kid who already is born. This kid sees the baby as, like, a demanding boss baby, hence the title of the movie. And you would think that it's just like, oh, there's a new baby who shows up who's demanding of his parents' attention. So the kid views this baby yeah. as, like, a boss who's always needing everything and is very demanding. But actually, then they show him, like, going into his room and the baby's, like, talking on a cell phone about, like, being an adult boss baby. You would think it would just be a metaphor for, like, this kid trying to adapt to a new baby. But no, it's actually a hyper-intelligent boss baby. Why is there a boss baby?
I mean...
But they never get into that?
Couldn't it?
No, I'm sure they do, but...
That could still be the twist.
Could it still...
That he just see this is just his delusion the whole time.
That's not, that's like the Lego movie reveal.
Yeah,
yeah. Tuesday. And
you never played a Lego video game?
Like, I have younger cousins. I've been there.
Oh, yeah, they're fun.
I just buy them for myself.
Yeah, I do too.
You liar.
No, Lego Star
no,
Wars.
Julie,
Lego Harry Potter.
Julie fucking loves Lego games.
Yeah, because
I don't get them. They're all fucking easy as hell.
Well, they
yeah,
know they are. But it's literally just like if you like this thing but want it to be less
yeah.
self serious.
It's very. I think what happens is it's very satisfying for collectors. It's very. It's like
that might.
It's so easy. Like, it just feels very satisfying to, like, kill an enemy and then suck up its Lego goodness.
That's...
is that your read? You suck up their Lego goodness?
You do.
Goodness.
You, like, walk
pieces.
Near it and it, like...
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom,
yeah,
boom, and then
the
you, like,
pieces.
Have Lego pieces and then you can, like, build other shit. And, like, it feels really good to get, like...
Lego goodness.
900 out of 900 Legos in a level. Like, oh, damn, I got all the Lego pieces.
Yeah.
So good at Legos.
That is how you play Legos in the real
yeah.
world.
That's not how I was. When I
There's
had Legos
over.
As a kid, I would need to, like, really follow the directions to make sure I did it right the first time. And then I could fuck around with it as much as I wanted.
What a boss baby.
I was a boss baby. I would turn people's faces to face me whenever I wanted attention. Like, physically grab their faces and turn them towards me.
What a needy babby. I didn't want... any attention.
She was the opposite of boss
Shunned
baby.
Secretary
intern
baby.
Baby.
Intern baby. I'll just get the coffee, baby.
I'm gonna wake up. Yes and no. I'm gonna kiss some part of. I'm gonna keep.
Welcome to Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends and an occasional guest get together to discuss a very troubled movie and then try to fix it. I am Chris, Dream Machine Ravel.
I am Lee, Diamond Face Delahanty.
I am Brendan, Peaceful Fountains of Desire Drishler.
And with us is an aforementioned special guest, if you could please introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Brendan Aston Martin Vanish Neistat.
If you couldn't guess from our nicknames, we are doing 2002's Die Another Day, starring Pierce Brosnan, Rosamund Pike,
Halle Berry,
Toby Stevens,
and Dame Judi Dench,
and then a host of other, who cares?
I care about John Cleese.
Yeah,
John Cleese. Anyone else that I missed?
Madonna.
Yeah,
Madonna.
In a cameo,
yeah.
As the fencing teacher. But the only way we could get there, the only way we could sit through this movie, was to drink not one, but two themed cocktails. Brendan, tell us what we imbibed this evening.
Okay. The first cocktail we had was called Sex for Dinner, which was one part gin, one part lavender vodka, one part elderflower liqueur, two parts sweet and sour mix, and a lime wedge garnish. The second one was Death for Breakfast, which is 1 ounce mezcal, drink with an orange wedge and cinnamon as you would a tequila shot. And it was just Chris and myself who did Death for Breakfast, and the three of us did Sex for Dinner.
So let's just start at the Death for Breakfast.
Okay.
Because Brendan, you and I did that one.
Twice.
We did it twice, and I feel like you and I both reared back like cobras. Like, when we did it, it was a tough shot.
It was good. I like mezcal.
It's delicious. I love the smokiness. I especially feel that shooting it, how they shoot tequila, as I learned in Germany, is with cinnamon and orange instead of salt and lime. If you could please just report back to me what you found with that.
Oh, I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting twist on tequila shots.
Yeah. Well, I just felt like it softened it.
Yeah, no, it did.
So, Ed, we in the wheel opened it up to the crew.
For our Sex for Dinner.
Yeah, Sex for Dinner. What do we think? I thought it was amazing. I actually think it ranks as one of the best cocktails we've done.
I feel like if I made it again, I would use a little less lavender vodka. Because it was a little close to dish soap.
Mmm. Lane? It was pretty good. 3.5 stars out of I won't tell you how many.
Wow.
Out
38?
Of 5? 38. I mean, like, if it was pretty good, I would imagine it's out of 5.
38 stars.
And for our non-drinking cohort, I made kind of like a... I was going to make a spa water for you, Brendan, which was going to just be a lot of, like, ginger and lemon all kind of just, like, sitting in a nice, chilled, sparkling water, but we couldn't make it sparkle. So I made it a hot tea instead and added some pepper and cinnamon. What did you think?
It was delicious.
I'm so glad.
It was just like everything that I like. Nice and warm and cozy and not like this movie at all.
I mean, I tried to spin it as like, what would you drink when you're in an ice hotel?
No, I would want that. I would order that all the time if I were staying in an ice palace.
Who among us will step up to the plate to try to sum up this shit pile of a movie?
I think the best person to summarize this movie is our good friend Wikipedia.
You are, you know what? Again. Wikipedia is Spartacus. Go ahead.
MI6 officer James Bond infiltrates a North Korean military base where Colonel Tan Sun Moon is illegally trading weapons for African blood diamonds. After Moon's assistant Zhao discovers that Bond is a British agent, Moon attempts to kill Bond, and a hovercraft chase ensues, which ends with Moon's apparent death. Bond survives, but is captured by North Korean soldiers and imprisoned by the Colonel's father, General Moon. Cue title sequence, Madonna's Die Another Day. After 14 months of captivity and torture, Bond is traded for Zhao in a prisoner exchange. He is sedated and taken to M, who informs him that his 00 status has been revoked, and he is under suspicion of having leaked information under duress. Bond is convinced he's been set up by a double agent and decides to avenge his betrayal. After he escapes MI6 custody, he discovers that he's in Hong Kong, where he learns from a Chinese agent that Zhao is in Cuba. In Havana, Bond meets Jinx, who is an NSA agent, and follows her to a gene therapy clinic where Zhao is. There, patients can have their appearances altered through DNA restructuring. He attempts to kill Zhao, but Zhao escapes, leaving behind a pendant which leads Bond to a cache of diamonds identified as conflict diamonds, but bearing the crest of the company owned by British billionaire Gustav Graves. At a club in London, Bond meets Graves along with his assistant Miranda Frost, who's also an undercover MI6 agent. After a fencing exercise and sword fight, Bond is invited by Graves to Iceland for a scientific demonstration of Icarus, his newest project. Shortly afterward, M restores Bond's 00 status and offers assistance in the investigation. At the Ice Palace, Graves unveils Icarus, which is able to focus solar energy on a small area and provide year-round sunshine for crop development. During the night, Jinx infiltrates Graves' command center but is captured by Graves and Zhao. Bond rescues her and discovers that Colonel Moon is still alive. Moon has used gene therapy technology to change his appearance and assume the identity of Gustav Graves. Bond confronts Graves, but Frost arrives to reveal herself as the traitor who betrayed Bond in North Korea, forcing 007 to escape from Graves' facility. Bond then returns in his Aston Martin vanish to rescue Jinx, who has been captured once again. Zhao pursues him in his own vehicle, with both driving through the rapidly melting ice palace that Icarus has focused sunshine on. Bond kills Zhao by shooting an ice chandelier onto him, and then revives Jinx after she is drowned. Bond and Jinx pursue Graves and Frost to the Korean Peninsula and stow away on Graves' plane. Graves reveal his true identity to his father and the purpose of the Icarus satellite, to cut a path through the Korean demilitarized zone with concentrated sunlight, allowing North Korean troops to invade South Korea and reunite the peninsula by force. Horrified the fact that it would result in a nuclear war with the United States, Moon tries to stop the plan but is murdered by his own son. Bond attempts to shoot Graves, but he is prevented by one of the soldiers on board. In the struggle, a gunshot pierces the fuselage, causing the plane to descend rapidly. Bond engages Graves in a fist fight, and Jinx attempts to regain control of the plane. Frost attacks Jinx, forcing her to defend herself in a sword duel. After the plane passes through the Icarus beam and is further damaged, Jinx kills Frost. Graves attempts to escape by parachute, but Bond opens the parachute, causing Graves to be pulled out of the plane into one of the engines, killing him and disabling the Icarus beam. Bond and Jinx escape the disintegrating plane in a helicopter from the cargo hold, carrying away Gustav Graves' stash of diamonds in the process. El fin.
I just want to say congratulations to Wikipedia for giving us possibly the most concise summary of a movie that we could have ever wished.
It really made this movie sound like it made sense.
Yeah, this clarified a lot, honestly. Yeah.
It really did.
The summary couches something in a way that I hadn't thought about before. But
what's
like,
that?
The thought of a North Korean general giving a shit about starting worldwide nuclear war
Yeah,
is hilarious to me.
It also, well, to me, I find it honestly interesting that, like, there is, like, a crazy North Korean guy.
Yeah.
And, like, a sensible North Korean guy who's like, holy shit, it's like, you've gone nuts. We don't like this.
How do you work for North Korea and
not be, and not be like, bananas?
Wait, I know we do want to use nuclear weapons against South Korea, but, like, guys, we don't want to start a war.
That plays into what I would like to put forth as my first topic here. It's really the tone that this movie kind of struggles with.
Yeah.
So where we start is very much in what feels like a more real-world place. It's with Bond and two other nameless agents surfing in
but
to North Korea.
Okay, but to be fair, the real world starts after they fucking surf in.
Yeah, and after they open the surfboard up,
yes.
Get everything out of the
revealing
all
their tactical combination gear. Knife satellite dish. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, where he stabs the knife into the ground and it turns into
there's
a
no
satellite.
There's no real world scenario where surfing is the best way to sneak into an operation.
It's the best tactical choice you could make. But that aside, the very beginning is shot, I don't know what to say, filtered, acted, toned in a way that is telling you this is gritty, this is a little more real, this is a little more serious.
It's right. Still glossier than, like, a Daniel Craig.
Oh, yeah, no, it certainly
but
is.
But, like, I
but
mean,
like for the time.
The
it's in that direction. It's in the
more
Daniel Craig direction, I would say.
But
yeah,
the subject
it's
matter is still, like,
tonally.
It's more like real. It's too
right.
real.
Well,
for
because
Bond.
Like we've never really dealt with like North Korea, to my recollection, at least in
yeah.
a Bond movie before.
Like even like all right. So before this was World Is Not Enough, and that was like oil, which we all
right.
can get behind as like a
right.
spy. Like
yes.
And then you had like crazy Rupert Murdoch, which is out of nothing, but like kind of crazy
the
and
news.
Awesome.
Like he wants
played,
to control
yeah.
the news, basically.
Played by the
and
High
then
Sparrow.
GoldenEye was like good old Russia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that we're dealing with like a very real like modern day
right.
Espionage thing, and it's like this just feels weird. Like,
if I can just
new.
The fact that Pierce Brosnan's run of the Bond movies started with GoldenEye, in my opinion, a perfectly balanced between kind of like camp and like real thriller love letter to the Cold War. That's where it started. Really, honestly.
I know, but like, what a bizarre thing to claim. Like, the Cold War.
No, but it really is.
No,
I mean,
I know. Because
it harkens to the good old days.
Yeah. It does.
We had Russia
because,
similar.
Okay,
yeah, when women in bikinis would destroy symbols of communism.
Right, exactly. It was the perfect bridge from the Cold War sensibility of Bond into what it was in the 90s.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then what we end with in the Pierce Brosnan run is a half-hearted stab at our geopolitics with North Korea that then turns into a cartoon show that is
yeah.
paying homage to every Bond movie ever made.
Well, I actually feel like, now that I thought about it, Tomorrow Never Dies to me is a better, like, if we have to do Bond in a modern era where Bond doesn't make sense anymore with modern spies, then, like, that's the good way to do it with, like, a crazy,
right,
like,
with
crazy
media.
News
no,
yeah,
I think there's
a mogul.
Yeah,
yeah. That's a
there's a good way to do
today.
Bond, I think, with without having it be, like, the threat of, like, a rogue nation. It's
mm-hmm.
the threat of, like, this one person
yeah.
who wants to do X,
exactly.
and therefore we must stop.
I think,
this
yeah, the Bond thing is like you just need to have a crazy villain.
Yeah,
and like if you have that, you don't need. To, it doesn't need to be like
which,
real spy issues.
Yeah, and to be fair, also like even back in like the 60s and 70s, we were dealing with Spectre,
yeah, 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 yeah.
Blofeld.
Yeah, it was Smirsch like briefly in the books, and then it was like Spectre in the movie. So it was like it was Russia, but it wasn't like Russia in the sense that like we're dealing with the USSR. It's like oh, we're dealing with like a rogue bunch.
Well, but
of crazy
yeah,
it's,
but
then
it's
even
like the Illuminati type
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, like it's always like a cabal of like
yeah.
shadowy people. Who are
even
trying
in
to do
the
stuff.
Half-assed video games they did of the Bond movies, I'm saying beyond GoldenEye. Which was all about Russia, really. They even did, in a few of the more modern throwback Bond games, they did Octopus, which is supposed to be another USSR.
Well, they just
yeah.
did that because they lost the rights to Spectre. It's tied to the USSR, but Spectre has always been sort of like a cabal of like multinational.
I guess so.
Because like,
yeah.
you
have Hydra.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
one level crazier.
It's sort of like
yeah.
the man
yeah.
from Uncle, right?
Right. People, like evil people from all around the world.
Yeah,
you have like
you
yeah.
have good people from
it's
all
a coalition
yeah.
of villains.
yeah, exactly. It's like, I think there is a reason why the movies, for the most part, chose to focus on like a fictitious group of like multinational
right.
villains than like to say, oh, Russia is the bad guy.
Yeah, but this is very, whereas this is a very nationalist
yeah.
like
a little
villain
bit.
And
they,
plot.
Okay, hear me out. It is North Korea, but it's also like this one guy in North Korea and his son. So
yeah.
they do remove it. It's not like Kim Jong-il is like the bad
but
guy.
But it's
I would even argue, though, it's not even the father in that case. Because they even give him a scene in this movie where he's like, you've gone way too far. This
you've
is way
too
much.
Far.
Yeah, not true that.
You've gone it's too true. Far. I hope that's a trope that keeps recurring in this podcast because I love it. But it's really the son. It's really Kim Jong-un in this case, if we're being
yeah,
serious.
Yeah, but it's not... It's right. not I, is it...
I think wait, he's like an analog.
Moon,
yeah.
Is Moon really
I assumed,
the leader of North Korea?
I, no. I thought he was.
They imply.
I assumed this was like just the military.
Yeah, I thought it was
thing.
Just a general.
But,
like,
but
you still have the...
Did you not get the impression watching this that, at least in the version of North Korea in this world, they're under like a junta, essentially, where they're being like ruled by...
No, I thought that Moon was like not even the top dog in North Korea.
Yeah, they don't even show they don't even show Pyongyang. It's just like some rinky-dink like base on the side of it.
Yeah,
them.
So
it's
one could argue
capital.
That the fact that we're not really sure who's calling the shots here is another
it's a problem.
It is an issue, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how important it is. That
yeah,
just guy
is it literally just like this
son.
Guy and his rogue army, or is this
yeah.
like are they speaking on behalf of?
But
Korea?
Okay, so what? I, but can I go
yeah, yeah.
a second? Because
yeah.
what I want to say is you're still like it's still a crazy guy, but like, but his motivations are very like nationalist. Like,
yeah.
his motivation
yeah.
is like, I want this for my country, and
right.
it's like
he wants to
okay,
re-
but
yeah.
like you're also like you also now have like a world eating laser. You can think bigger now, like
which is weird. His own desire is to reunite the Korean Peninsula. It's like you could destroy Washington D.C. Like,
yeah.
Go after something.
You could destroy anything
yeah.
you wanted. You could destroy China, which was also a problem for you at this
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
It's crazy that, and this was one of my main problems, his plan is to create this satellite that turns the sun into a world-destroying laser to just get rid of the landmines that exist between the DMZ that separates North and South Korea. The insane part about that is there is probably another way. They have fucking hovercrafts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
hovercrafts have got to be cheaper. Come
yeah.
on.
It is
yeah.
like getting a flamethrower to get rid of a bee's nest.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
really
it's like toys with
oh, shooting
yeah.
the fly with the gun.
We start this movie in a very, not quite grayscale, but headed in that direction, sort of
it's
washed out
yeah.
very self-consciously gritty appearance and tone.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do we get after that beginning?
Well, okay, to be fair, when right after the colonel goes off the waterfall, James Bond grabs onto a ceremonial bell and says, "Saved by the bell," which is less a pun and more just a statement as to what happened.
Yeah.
Is that even a turn of phrase in Britain?
It seems very Western aimed.
Yeah.
He's not saved at all. Cause
no.
There's like an army behind him.
Temporarily rescued by the bell might
yeah.
have been a better turn
better
of phrase.
Better off hopping into that waterfall. Bomb.
Was that... That was probably supposed to be a shock for audiences though, right? Like, oh, he's probably
but
out because of this spell.
Who was he fooling? Was he fooling himself? Like, he's in a hostile
yeah.
mission.
He's in a country. Like, is he going to just like wander out of North
yeah,
Korea?
Yeah, well, now just get out of North Korea. Easy peasy.
He is James Bond.
Yeah, to be fair.
To be fair.
So, but yes, but the point is that we have a relatively realistic, gritty opening sequence that culminates in him being tortured, traded for Zhao, aka Diamond Face. And then we immediately, almost after that sequence, it devolves into like...
Cartoon.
Yeah, it devolves into like what you probably remember this movie being.
The exact moment. The exact moment is when he goes into fake cardiac arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow of his own accord.
Yes.
Because he did it on purpose to get out. And
yes.
then the second he lands in Hong Kong, and then instantly it goes to like ridiculous Roger Moore territory.
Right. Well, like when he wanders into the hotel, people are like, "Oh, no time.
Oh, he doesn't have time."
Yes.
He's sopping wet.
Yes.
Still.
And then,
yeah.
then you get
well, he has the long hair.
Yeah.
His shirt is open.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, as guest Brendan pointed out, Pierce Brosnan in this movie has still fucking got it.
Yeah.
He's
yes.
a very attractive man.
He's
yeah.
hot.
Yeah.
This is actually a really great segue into another thing I really wanted to get into. We kind of have two competing things going on here from the beginning into the rest of the movie, where we have real spy versus Bond spy. And what we get in the beginning is as close as we're going to get to real spy, right? So we have James
yeah.
Bond assuming the identity of someone else.
But the thing, yeah, but here's the thing with that is that, like, it's who is fooled by this at this point?
Yeah.
He's been walking
he's
around.
Wearing, his disguise is sunglasses.
For like
well,
10
which is
years.
Which is really one of the issues, right? Because we're so well versed with Bond spy. And this is a movie
yeah.
that is very self consciously paying homage to the many different ways that James Bond does his James Bond thing. So then it's so strange to start the movie off with a tone that is so real spy.
buy. I mean, I don't buy it because, like, there's that moment in the beginning when, someone rats him out as, like, oh, by the way, this is a spy. And I'm like, you guys didn't fucking know that?
Yeah.
This guy walks around everywhere with this face and he says
telling
that
people
name.
That I am Bond, James Bond.
Yeah.
He first introduces himself.
No, but
as
what I'm saying is, in the past, like, 19 movies, James Bond has been wandering throughout the world saying Bond, James Bond, to everyone who fucking wanders into his path. And this time he shows up with a pair of sunglasses and
says,
like, oh, I'm a diamond jeweler. And like it just watches North Korea. And they're like, wait a minute. This is a diamond jeweler.
Except in View to a Kill, where I think he's something like Robert Wellington.
No, I know. And there are times. No, and again, in Honor
of
Secret Service.
You buy it, though, because
it uses an accent.
And he actually adopts a persona.
Yeah.
I know you guys don't have internet in North Korea, but like, God, could you, like, do some
flashcards?
Yeah.
It's really just a shock how this movie goes from a very stark, almost like Jason Bourne-style look to what we're used to with a Bond movie.
I'm interested. Where is Bourne in relation to this movie? Do
you mean,
remember?
Like, when did Bourne come out?
When did Bourne come out?
It was, like, 2 years after.
Yeah, because, like, Bourne was definitely, like, a post-9/11
reaction.
Yeah,
it was, like,
sort of a reaction.
For sure, like, it's gritty
action
time.
And, like, this was in production during 9/11, presumably.
Yeah.
So, like, this almost does feel like a weird transition between, like, what we expected from action movies before 9/11 to, like, the gritty realism that we were all really craving.
Isn't that interesting that they probably thought at the time, like, we're going to choose the villains of the future, and it's North Korea. Little did they know.
They could have gone with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
They could have gone
I mean, to be fair, did they not already go with Al-Qaeda in,
The World's Not Enough?
Yeah. No. In, what was the first Timothy Dalton one?
Living Daylights?
Yeah, Living Daylights. Yeah. Doesn't James Bond, like, effectively help Al-Qaeda?
Essentially.
It sort of does help, like...
No, but I'm just saying that in this movie's attempt to, you know, do this, the great homage to other Bond movies, why not also invoke this kind of Red Scare associate?
Well, no, I'm sure at the time North Korea made perfect sense, in the sense that, like, you have this communist country.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah.
So it's not Russia, but it's North Korea. Let's talk about something else.
Sick transition,
guys, bro. Can I bring up one really good thing?
Please
okay.
do.
So we're talking about the tonal shift between the beginning of the movie and the rest of the movie and the style. And
yeah.
I feel like given that this movie was also written by Purvis and Wade, who went on to write Casino Royale and all of the Daniel Craig
Skyfall,
movies.
Yeah.
And can
and
I just be honest, Casino Royale and Skyfall, two of my faves.
They're terrific.
Yeah.
And some of the same guys worked on those movies. I think that it's kind of interesting to view this through that filter and be like, this is kind of like a little bit like the direction that they would go in later on.
The beginning is very Daniel Craig. Would you agree?
Especially like the fact that he gets tortured. I the theme song is what it is, but we'll talk about that. But I think that it's kind of artfully interesting that they integrate that into the torture sequence where it's kind of, you know, you can interpret it as like a vision that he's seeing when he's being tortured. And
a lot of the, well, I think especially particularly in the Daniel Craig movies, a lot of the opening sequences had references to things that were happening in the movie later on. Previously, it was a lot of like naked women with things protected
doing
on
whatever.
Them. But like, I think there is a very clear transition from like, you know, women doing things to like, this is a theme of the movie.
Right.
And I think this really sort of reflects an interesting pivot in terms of that.
I mean, I almost entirely forgot about the opening to this movie, and I saw it in theaters. I forgot about the opening to this movie having any relationship with the Daniel Craig movies. I just remembered, you know, like, Ice Hotel, Satellite Laser, Invisible Car. That's the stupid shit I remember.
I'm never going to forget that opening.
Yeah.
It's just that bad.
Yeah.
I mean,
the
song is that bad. But I'm always going to remember the scorpions popping up.
Yeah.
When I was...
is that really any better or worse than, like, the one in Spectre where it's, like, the weird tentacle?
It's like
hentai. I haven't seen Spectre yet, guys.
It's not good.
I mean, like, it's not terrible. Like...
Not good, though.
I think
it's
also
very long.
That's the biggest problem I have with Spectre is that it's very, very long.
We kind of bitched about this before we started recording, but I'll say it again for you listeners. Spectre is a waste of both Monica Bellucci and Chris Evans.
Okay, so here's the thing. I am not sure that Die Another Day is the worst James Bond movie.
I think it's one of them.
Okay, yes. I think the cardinal sin that Die Another Day commits is that it is not entertainingly bad enough to be goofy bad, but not good enough to be like a solid James Bond movie. Like there are like Moonraker is a more ridiculous James Bond movie. Yeah. Because Moonraker has like the pigeon double take.
I always choose Moonraker.
Yeah. So like if you want like a more ridiculous
That's where
James
the gondola
Bond
is too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
like,
fucking gondola.
The transition from like the canals to like driving
and
on the ground.
Just, like, The fucking expression of his face when he's just like riding down the street like just casual.
Yeah,
like,
do, 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 do.
Just driving my gondola.
And
on
so, like,
road.
That honestly, like, I don't know if it's the worst James Bond movie. I think the problem with Dying of the Day is that it's thoroughly mediocre.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, it just doesn't rise to any level of potential.
Well, and it's not creative in any direction. It's not creative to give us something legitimately that I love, and it's not creative enough to give me something that I'm enjoying disliking. Like,
it feels very like they threw a bunch of shit on the wall, like spaghetti.
Yeah.
This
feels, and I think one of the things that reflects biggest on, like, the half-assed nature of this movie is the weird, like, quasi-innuendo that everyone uses, where lines are spoken as though it's supposed to be, like, a James Bond-style pun.
Or, like, sexy.
Yeah, but it's not. Like, whenever, like, Mr. Kill, the henchman, shows up, he's like, hello, my name is Mr. Kill, and James Bond goes, that's a name to die for. Yes, it is. Thank you for stating
or,
that.
Or, like, he has that whole conversation in this movie with Halle Berry's character Jinx, where it's like,
predators come out at night.
Yeah. Right, or, like, is the drink too strong for you? I'd grow to like it.
If I had the time.
If I had the time. Or it was also the whole thing of,
well,
like...
when he says, like, he's like, I'm James Bond, I'm an ornithologist, she goes, that's a mouthful.
While looking at his dick.
Are you an
while
idiot?
While looking at his dick, which is so stupid because that means the writing was just sort of like, you're going to say this, but what's really sell the line is you're staring way down south.
Look, I just realized that is a reference to something real, though. Because
the James
Ian
Bond.
Fleming, Ian Fleming got James Bond's name from a famous ornithologist.
Well, he has the book. Whenever he's in Cuba, he picks up the book written by the real-life James Bond who wrote a book about birds.
Do you think that this is the kind of writing... Is it? Because to me, it feels like this is what I would have done if it was, like, 3 a.m. before a deadline.
Oh crap.
So it's like, but, like, I don't have it in me right now.
It's like
place filler. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Tickets, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I have to die for.
So confusing innuendo, I feel like, is a really good place to just bring up the issue of generally abandoned plot threads in this movie. Let's actually start with what I feel to be the biggest abandoned plot thread.
Mm-hmm.
That the movie clearly wants us to invest in some kind of connection between James Bond, played by Pierce Brosnan, and Jinx, played by Halle Berry. I need to get to the bottom of this. What was going on?
Oh. Oh, look at me.
So the weird thing, and Brendan and I were talking about this before you guys got here, is that, like, Jinx feels like there's, like, an alternate dimension where Jinx has her own movie happening. And she's, like, doing her own thing. And every now and then, like, in Jinx Dies Another Day, Pierce Brosnan's James Bond wanders into, like, 5 scenes, and then she goes about her own goal, and it feels like our universe is, like, overlapped in this brief moment.
She has so little to do in this
movie. Well, but every time she shows up, it's like she's just gotten off doing this other weird thing
you
didn't see her
do. Like, yeah, it's just that we don't have time to, like, talk about her.
Right, like, it's just like, yeah. So it's like there is a movie with Jinx in it somewhere where she's done everything you don't see her do.
Well, have you heard one of the theories floated that this movie was supposed to be sort of a backdoor pilot?
No,
that's like
wanted to make. Yeah, it's not a theory. That's a thing
really?
That they actually, yeah. And they wanted to do the same thing with Michelle Yeoh. And,
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah, sorry.
I would have killed for a Michelle Yeoh, like, James Bond-style movie.
Well,
I would have died!
They always seem to, like, float this idea every now and then that, like, oh, this will be the spinoff of a woman action movie.
But it's never gonna happen.
Well, no.
Wow.
Because, just because they never invest enough into these female characters at all. There is the occasional Bond movie, and I will single out GoldenEye as an example where they...
Michelle Yeoh was good.
Michelle Yeoh was amazing! But in this movie, they gave Jinx nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Brendan has indicated, she's always coming in at the tail end of some other adventure that happens to be intersecting with James's, and it's never interesting. She's always just there.
No, I'm sure, like, the reason why they wanted to do a Jinx spinoff was because Halle Berry had won an Academy Award, and it would be really great to have, like, this Academy Award-winning actress, like, anchor your James Bond spinoff movie.
Do you know what I hope? I hope the whole deal was she, like, had the script for, like, Jinx, the first mission, and Catwoman on her desk, and she was like, you know what, guys? I'm gonna go with Catwoman.
Perfect.
Like, perfect.
Oh, boy.
Let's go to some other abandoned plot threads, though. So, basically, James and Jinx have virtually no relationship in this movie, despite whatever the ending may suggest.
I mean, other than, like, she's a woman and it was the first one he could fuck.
Yeah.
He hadn't fucked a woman in a long time because he was being tortured in North Korea.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, and again, like, that, to be fair, that's a lot of women in James Bond movies. Like, a lot of the women don't have a whole lot of, like,
it's just
relevance to him. They're
but,
just,
I mean, a lot of them are thrust into the adventure.
It's,
like, Natalia and the one at Mia.
Right, yeah, where some of it's like he has to protect this woman
yeah.
while X happens. But mm-hmm. here it's literally just like, no, she has her own agenda, and every now and then their paths will intersect.
And that's what actually frustrates me the most about her character, is that we're told she has her own agenda, she has her own mission, she has her own thing going on, but we never see it, and we never get an idea of it at all.
You sort of
well,
do.
Well, we see her, like, in, yeah, she busts really. Into Gustav Graves' compound.
But for what reason?
And then in the end, there's, like, a backwards reveal, because the guy is, like, the M and, like, Jinx's boss are arguing about, like, well, if you just told us that you had an NSA agent in Cuba.
See, the one thing that bugs me about that scene is where, like, M is upset that America never told her that Miranda
That's
Frost...
That's how spies work.
Well, no, that Miranda Frost and the Colonel were on the same fencing team in Harvard. How did MI6 not know that? How did MI6
She was
not
MI6's
do,
agent.
Yes, how yeah. did they not do enough research to realize, oh, wait, she was on the same fencing team as this guy? Like, MI6, you guys fucked up.
Yeah, your
they're
HR really department,
they're
get
back,
him out of there.
I mean, they're
yeah.
back, yeah,
so actually, that brings us to another random plot thread. Just the whole North Korean military family...
What about it? Well, I'm confused. I'm really confused.
Okay.
Not.
I know I bring this up because we're led to believe that this has a central role in the movie. That this is informing why secretly Korean Gustav Graves wants to harness laser to destroy the demilitarized zone.
Well,
role of his father, the role of his friend who becomes Diamond Face, the whole
deal. He betrayed
deal.
His dad in the beginning because
yeah.
he shouldn't have been trading weapons illegally.
Right. Because his dad shows up and he's like, why is the fire? I'll be there in 5 minutes. And you get the impression that, like, oh shit, my dad's gonna find out.
Oh shit, gotta trade
dealings.
These diamonds
yeah.
before daddy finds
yeah.
out.
I feel like that actually, like, that is not, like, to me at least, that is not so much an abandoned.
They don't really play it up. Like, is he trying to get his dad's approval? Is he
yeah,
trying to get
no,
his
I think
dad,
that,
like,
that's my main, that's my main
dad,
issue
like,
is.
I think it's a case of, like, they have the same, they want what's good for North Korea, but daddy is like, I wanna do this the old school honorable way, and
yeah.
son is like, I wanna illegally get diamonds and work with the West to
so they different methods.
Yeah, I didn't really get that. Because they seem to set that up as a big moment kind of close to the end where
mm-hmm.
they have that confrontation, but it has no weight because I have no idea of what
well,
their chances
they can't
are.
Deliver. Like, it's there. They just don't sell it at all.
Yeah.
At all.
I do think, yeah, I agree with Lee in that, like, it's there, but it's not, like, it doesn't have
yeah,
the impact
it has,
that it all
you can
to.
See it because I think we both saw it, but
yeah.
it just has no weight to it. It doesn't
yeah.
feel, it definitely, I don't
no.
feel an emotional impact from it.
No,
but
I think, I do think that to be, like, again, I'm assuming that the father is the leader of North Korea in this equation. So, I don't know. In my head, I thought so too. I kind of like the idea that, like, maybe the leader of North Korea is not quite like the maniac he once used to be in his younger days, and now he's a little more mellow. And
are
it's
we
kind
getting
of like
a glimpse into your fix?
No, but like maybe he was kind of like, well, maybe there is a way that we could kind of get along with the rest of the world. But his son is like, this was not how I was raised. Like, I'm gonna fuck shit up, and I'm gonna fuck shit up on a colossal scale. And so, like, there is a conflict between those two. Like, I kind of like that as a concept.
Okay, within the abandoned plot threads, though, and actually we're getting into this with the sun, just the science and technology in this movie.
Like, so the dream mask?
Yes.
That?
So we
dream
have...
Machine.
Here's my entry into this issue. The sun.
Yes.
Of the Korean general...
General Sun Moon.
Yes. The son of General Sun Moon.
Sun Moon.
Which was such a fucking lazy...
No, to be honest, I like the name. I'll say
General Sun Moon?
No, I do. There was, I think, one of, like, the non-Fleming James Bond novels has a character named, like,
but
Sun Moon or something.
That doesn't make it better.
I'm not saying it makes it better, but I'm saying it feels like a dumb James Bond character name.
Yes, that I agree with.
Yeah.
But
that is
if,
Jinx, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, James Bond is cool
actually, no,
characters with
I
dumb names.
I disagree. I actually
really?
Think Jinx plays to me more like a late 90s, early 2000s edition.
Interesting.
Because that, to me, actually screamed... Male executives in a room needing to insert a quote-unquote girl power.
I could see that as like a
60s.
No,
like
Jinx, yeah, it feels like a live and let die sort of thing,
yeah.
almost, yeah.
I get what you guys are saying, but that to me felt so 90s shoehorned in. One of the other bit of plot threads to me is this very kind of technological thread of with the son of the Korean general who has extensive gene therapy done to him to make him not only Caucasian, but British, and takes on the identity of Gustav Graves.
Yes.
So that's one part. And we see actually done to his friend, who is also trying to have the same thing done to him. It's essentially he's strapped to a bed with like a light band tied over his face. with almost like drawn on like circuitry board shit.
Some disused prop from Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, exactly. But then because of this gene therapy, he has permanent insomnia. So for some reason, he has a really crazy mask made out of like fiber optic cables.
With like fiber optic wig.
It's like a luxurious mane.
It looks like a poster for Follies or something.
It kind of reminded me of
But it's his dream machine, right? Yeah. He doesn't sleep.
No, he says insomnia is permanent. The dream machine keeps me sane. So he has to sit in the dream machine to, like,
to
not go insane.
Sleep?
To not go insane.
I think
insane.
It's kind of, like, processes memories.
Yeah, I assume it's, like, he's still awake. But it's like the dream machine, like, basically like puts his brain in kind of like a resting state.
Okay, here's my problem with that.
Oh, you have a problem?
I'll allow it, counselor.
It's hard science.
Okay, here's my issue. That didn't need to be an issue in this movie. Why did they create it and then have this completely extraneous dream machine?
I don't know, because they just had this cool prop.
Somebody in the effects department built it and they wrote it into the movie.
Yeah, seriously. And somebody was just like, guys, I'm working on the like 80s retro, what's that? Hair metal. For my hair metal band, what do you think?
Guys, there's a new band called Daft Punk that wants some sort of helmets. I think I've drawn up a rough sketch. Do you guys think they'll like this? The biggest issue I have with Graves is that Graves, as a person, did not exist prior to 14 months before the majority of this movie.
Oh my god, and yet he's a celebrity!
Everyone knows about Graves, but Graves did not exist. He's being knighted by the Queen, but...
For
what? Well, for being rich, I guess. I think they say something about him giving money to charity, but
it's not enough.
It's because he's so cool.
Because he parachutes in with the British flag. But the point is that this person shows up out of nowhere, and no one's like, "Huh, that's weird." Everyone is just like, "Oh, okay, Gustav Graves."
He has no
very
pedigree.
Attractive.
I have another red flag about his whole thing. His whole like cover story for the Icarus satellite is like. Guys, look, I made light and warmth that we can give to them. Like, but global warming, like,
yeah.
The opposite of what you have created. Like, where do we need more light and warmth right now?
Isn't that hysterical?
We're good on this.
But they were just like, guys, we need to do Moonraker, but we need to do it bigger. How do we do that? A laser made out of the sun? Great. What's the cover story?
That satellite looked like utter shit, by the way.
It looks like an umbrella, but it was like, how do we top that?
Well, the fact that the car is invisible.
Well, I have...
They don't utilize that. There's no good
payoff
for that at all.
It shows up, and like, it's dumb. Like, let's be honest. The fact that the car is invisible is dumb. But you at least...
It's a gimmick.
Like,
well, really.
It's not used for anything. The one time it's
the
used,
too, yeah.
Somebody fucking crashes into
yes.
it.
Mm-hmm. To be
and
fair,
then it's immediately made pointless.
I did laugh at the part where, like, the fact that, like, the car is found out by some idiot who crashes into the invisible car.
To be fair, he's not an idiot.
No. It's just, he's a guy who's driving. He crashes into the car.
But, Brendan, did Bond use the invisible car to any great effect?
No, I would say that it was completely wasted. Even they have something that seems like it should be a payoff moment in the car chase at the end when Diamond Face goes over the edge.
But I don't understand what happened.
It doesn't. Yeah. The car didn't need to be invisible for that whatsoever.
The play-by-play is the car is not invisible, and it's like perpendicular to this.
To
Diamond
a precipice.
Face,
like
yeah,
right,
yeah,
yeah.
To perpendicular to this, Diamond Face is going to come at him and ram him off the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Bond makes the car invisible. Diamond Face is like, huh? But like, you don't think, that, if you're Diamond Face, you don't think the car's vanished.
Right, he's like, you know, that's weird. I guess I better keep driving until the car is vanished.
It didn't teleport, yes. Right? Like, cars can't do that.
But and you, again, but to be fair, he is aware that the car is invisible too.
Yeah,
because
he
saw
drives,
it invisible.
But he acts freaked out like the car has disappeared. And then it drives off the edge, and then it's revealed that the car has, like, backed up.
Yeah.
But I'm like, but you could have just backed up.
Yes, you need not be invisible.
You could have just thrown the car into reverse.
Like, what is the issue?
There's another abandoned plot thread I really want to pick up on, and it's really the entire existence of Miranda Frost. Did she exist entirely to be
the
one? Because
you need the evil... Well, you always need
evil. Yeah, there's always an
good.
Evil woman.
So, hold on. Was it just for the...
Woman.
Nice, guys. I'm glad you guys... To me, that was really just the obvious gimme to, like, hey, guys, wasn't The World It's Not Enough had a great twist with Electra King?
Yeah, but again, like, Lisa,
let's
there's
do it
almost
again.
Always, like, a bad woman. Like,
yeah.
This is how James Bond operates. There is, like, the good Bond girl and, like, the bad Bond
Tomorrow
girl.
Never Dies, like, was actually startling because it didn't really have that.
Yeah.
you would think Terry Hatcher would have been like, I'm secretly on my husband's side, but no, she was not.
And
she
gets killed off like that.
And the Michelle Yeoh is definitely not on his side.
Well, they're like good. They're on the side of
they're on the side of righteousness.
Yeah. Justice! They say that.
As they go to kill Jonathan Pryce. Justice! Yeah.
I guess
for Terry Hatcher!
I guess I just bring it up because the character of Miranda Frost is so thin. Like, she really exists.
What a compliment.
Well, we don't.
No, but I just mean.
The movie doesn't
and
hurt.
Has such nice
I just mean she exists as, I guess, to be the reveal who gave James Bond away in North Korea initially to get him busted.
Yeah, and the movie
and that is the one
betrayal.
Right, and then you just, like, what, betrays him again when it comes to Gustav Graves? But why? I mean, is the other reason she's there to just have a cat fight with Halle Berry?
Partly.
The world's not enough, like...
She throws on that strappy sports bra. Yeah, goes to town.
What's the line that she said? Oh, I can read your every move. And then Halle Berry stabs her with a copy of the...
Through a book.
Or, like, with a dagger in it. She goes, read this. Pause, bitch.
What are you going to say, Lee?
In The World Is Not Enough, Electric King's betrayal is earned because time is spent on her being, like, this damsel in distress. And then it's revealed that, like, no, she fell in love with her captor and now she's, like, totally on his side.
Yeah.
But whatever the fuck we just watched, I have to say. I don't know shit about Miranda Frost.
Yeah.
I just see her...
At all.
Tag along with Gustav Graves and then it's like... She goes from being, like, good person, bad person to good person to bad person in, like, 3 seconds, and I'm like, I'm whiplash.
Well, yeah, and then is that reveal that she is the one that betrayed them when she's not involved in the mission to begin the movie at all.
Right. Yeah.
Right. See her. So, yeah,
you're not invested in her begin with.
The point is, like,
that'd be like if Sean Bean's character in GoldenEye wasn't introduced until after he already disappeared.
Yeah,
you never
like, oh, my God, my old spy friend.
Oh,
I'm like, what?
Yeah, we never knew this guy.
And, I mean, the big thing also, I think, with Miranda Frost is that when you first see her, you assume she's bad because she's with Gustav Graves, who we know is bad because his evil theme music played as he parachuted down. And so, like, you already think she's bad. Then you're like, oh, no, I guess she's good. She's worth MI6. It's like, no surprise, she was the thing you thought she was in the beginning. Like, it's not a surprise.
No.
Because, like, it just means that your initial perception was correct.
And it's also no offense to Rosamund Pike, but she doesn't...
No, I want to offend Rosamund Pike.
But she...
How dare you?
I know that's been Brendan's mission from the beginning of this
podcast.
Yeah, you
know what, Rosamund Pike? You're on notice.
But she doesn't, like, play it either way. She's very flat in this movie.
She was a baby.
She's just cold, 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 cold.
She's
frosty.
This is before she...
Stay frosty.
Yeah, this is before she stayed frosty as Amy and Gone
Girl. Amazing
Amy. Let's just talk about the women in this movie.
There were women in this movie?
I know, right? So we kind of touched on Miranda Frost, who we already established as sort of a flat character who wears...
I don't know that any of them do a disservice to my gender, but, like, they just are not there a lot.
I think it's more to guys explaining to you, like, how, like, women are portrayed in this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly just their failings are through characters, not through the fact that they're women. Like, they come off as bad characters. They don't come off as, like, bad women.
But, I mean, I don't think that they're, like, they're written poorly, but I don't think that they're, like, backward. I don't think
it's not like Diamonds Are Forever, where you have, like, women who are, like, nagging shrews and, like, shrieking harpies. Like,
right.
they're just not good characters.
I mean, we just talked about how Jinx is doing everything that Bond is doing, but is getting there first and without as many, like, fuck-ups, basically.
Yeah, like, they're all, like,
and yet is
women.
Considered the least a less effective
and
agent
yet,
because she's always needing to be
But and yet somehow manages to, we didn't talk about this, but in the summary I didn't realize that, like, Bond rescues her and then she immediately gets captured again. In the span of, like, an hour.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, I'm gonna leave you here, I'm gonna go do something else, and then by the time he gets she's somewhere else.
Well, I mean, and then to touch on Rosamund Pike, as I point out to you guys, this is a woman who, when getting ready to go to the big gala at the Ice Hotel, decides, my name is Miranda Frost, I'm at an ice hotel, I'm gonna wear snowflake earrings.
You really hung up on these
earrings. And an ice blue dress
and
with a fur.
Dress she sashays in with her snowflake earrings and
I'm
her blue dress.
I'm just saying, it was too on the nose, and that's for me, someone who loves...
dresses and sashaying.
A woman who sashays in a ridiculous outfit. I'm just pointing that out.
Anyhow.
In
Chris,
all seriousness...
I didn't notice her snowflake earrings, even though you told me so many times.
I think you specifically said to look for
I forgot to look for them.
What were you gonna say, Brandon?
Well, I wanna make a point about Frost in that she, I think that we all noticed this moment where she's revealed as the traitor, and Graves says that she's been his puppet the entire time, and he says that I used her sex against you or something. And she doesn't react to it at all. And I think that is a really uncomfortable, like, moment as far as their dynamic and her being used as a woman. And, I mean, she's supposed to be an MI6 agent, but then she's a traitor, but we don't really have a good reason for why she's
I think the way
a traitor,
they play
like,
that is because Gustav says the thing we share, him and Miranda Frost, the thing they share is that we both will do anything to win. So I guess...
That's a terrible motivation.
No, I know, but I think that was... I'm not saying it works, I'm just saying I think that was supposed to explain that moment.
Well, that's
like,
what,
she's
that's
like,
what
well, yeah,
said,
I
yeah.
fucked you, of course, because that's what it took to win.
I assumed that she was in on this. I didn't think it was like literally like Gustav Graves manipulated her as seeing with James Bond. I assumed she was like, yep, like I did use my sex against you because you're like a walking boner.
But he like sabotaged the Olympics so that was what he had
right.
on her, right?
Well, no, I think it was that she wanted desperately to win. So he was like, I'll arrange it so that this person overdoses on steroids.
Right.
And therefore you will win. And she's like, great.
Great, I'll do whatever you need.
Yeah. And those earrings.
And that ice blue dress.
Like, what I want to talk about is this sort of, like, side bit women are terrible.
Like who?
Like, the one in the
Samantha
beginning.
Samantha Bond!
Well, the one in the beginning who,
Chris.
Down. Now.
What's her, like, the Durst, who, like,
oh,
gives him
the kiss
so,
of
like,
life, yeah.
He's been, like, faking dead, and then, like, lets this woman kiss him.
Yeah.
Then he gets up and he's like, thanks for the kiss of life, but it's like, any normal person would be like, what an asshole.
But she looks
yeah.
at him. With such sexual intensity.
She looks at him like, I'm ready to fuck this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
And he just electrocuted her colleagues
yeah.
right in front of her.
Yeah. And she's like,
possibly.
Well,
not
yeah,
even
possibly,
bothered
yeah.
by it.
Either way, you should not shock a person. Whether
no.
or not they're dead is beside the point.
Defibrillator's got a lot
yeah.
of energy in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's not a good thing either way.
No. But hey, no, he had to get out.
No, but she looks at him like, I fucks him. I'd also just want to touch on Samantha Bond in this movie.
Film Crit Hulk has this, like, thing about how Bond movies have a direct proportional relationship to, like, how Moneypenny is portrayed in them and how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the more ridiculous Moneypenny is in the movie, the less good the movie tends to be. And I think this is a very good example of Moneypenny coming off as, like, this ridiculous, like, sex-starved character.
She's sex-starved.
In a bad movie.
She seems really desperate, and they make her seem really pathetic.
Yeah.
Because, okay, Moneypenny really only shows up for one scene that does not contribute to the movie at all.
Well, she has two. She's introduced in the beginning.
But I'm saying the big, like, fake-out scene is in this, like, VR, what would you even call it?
It's
simulation.
A VR headset, yeah.
Where she basically is experiencing James Bond come on to her, only for Q, played by John Cleese, to come in and be like, what are you doing in here? And she's
That's
like...
a very good job, please.
But it's
Moneypenny.
Okay, so given that this was the 40th anniversary movie for James Bond, right?
Uh-huh.
Was this like one of those failures where it's like, for the fans, well, we'll fake out the fans and they'll think that Bond and Moneypenny
oh, yeah.
finally
I bet,
get together
I bet
after 40
it.
Years.
I bet you
can't
that's
actually,
it.
They don't actually.
Yeah.
I said that's
virtual
it.
Reality.
Yeah.
That's
I'm sure that's 100% it.
And I bet they were like, you guys, it's going to dovetail so perfectly. We're going to use the effects they couldn't use back then to show them how this is impossible.
Do you know what that
James
really
Bond would never fuck a woman who's like 8 years younger than him, which is that was the age difference between the actors.
Do you know what I was suddenly reminded of is, if you ever seen the music video for the Finest Girl song from Popstar?
I'm trying to remember.
The actual music, like the one that was like put out that wasn't like part of the movie Popstar.
Uh-huh.
It's like, it's just Andy Samberg like taking off an Oculus Rift and going like, damn, it was all a virtual reality experience. That's like what I thought of. Like Moneypenny taking the sunglasses off.
Just that poor woman.
What about Pierce Brosnan in this movie? How do you guys think he did?
I actually
good.
Think he did He's okay.
A good boy.
I like Brosnan. A
I
lot of people have bad things to say about him, but I like
actually
him.
Think
the movie, not the Bond.
I think I was going to say I think
he got
I,
bad movies.
I think
yeah.
I think
yeah.
the bad perception of Brosnan comes from the bad movies, and I think it's because GoldenEye, at least for me personally, I hold up pretty high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I think the Brosnan movies took a very steep downward slope from there. So right, like we have Tomorrow Never Dies, which is pretty good but not great. And then, like, you keep just going down from there. Like, The World Is Not Enough. Also, you know, a little less good, but still all right.
I think there's a very clear, like, decline in quality through the run. I think it, like, it is, like, favorite second, third, fourth
right.
in terms of, like, how Brosnan is.
But Pierce Brosnan is never bad himself in there. And I will also say, in the same way, that none of the actors in this movie are bad. It's really just the characters are written so poorly.
So the one thing we thought about James Bond is how he's... Pierce Brosnan does not do a very good accent in this movie.
Not at all.
He's phoning it.
Like,
he's
there are times when he clearly sounds Irish. And my favorite Pierce Brosnan moment is in this movie is when he's talking to M on the medical boat, and she says something like, you know, there's been a report that, like, someone, like, in your prison, like, leaked information, blah, 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 blah. And he turns and he points to what is effectively the camera and says, what do you think? As if to say, like, what do you, the viewers at
what do you
think James Bond did?
Hey, audience, text 555 Bond.
Text Bond did it. Yes, which is, I think, maybe my favorite moment in this movie. James Bond commanding the audience to announce what they feel.
What do you think?
You know, I really
put that right up there with his famous Taffin line.
Why maybe you shouldn't be living here?
Taffin being a movie no one who listens to this podcast has seen.
Well, you should.
They've seen that clip. Hopefully,
they've seen that clip. It's a pretty,
if they know you.
It's gone pretty viral.
No, it's I've seen it before. I knew that, like, Lee had seen it. Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan, he does a good job with what he's given. He's just not given very much.
Who's your favorite Bonds? Everyone, favorite Bonds.
Right now?
Just like
just
of all
say
of them.
My favorite Bond.
Honestly, I have a tie.
All right.
Connery and Craig.
My ties are Brosnan and Foxman.
Dalton?
Yeah, Dalton.
I feel like
you instantly knew.
I know.
I like Dalton in theory, but I don't like his movies that much.
I like his movies. I mean, I like Living Daylights better, but
I feel like he could have been like the Daniel Craig for the 80s, and the movies could have been more serious, but they never
They didn't want it to. Like, he wanted to go serious.
They fought it.
We can't go that serious.
Yeah.
They fought it with Pam Bouvier.
Yeah.
The problem is I like some of the Daniel Craig movies, but I don't like the gritty Bond. I don't like it.
That's fair. I do feel that Bond is keeling too toward a gritty realism at this point, and I kind of hope it, like, bends back more toward, like, a slightly ridiculous thing.
See, that's why I love Casino Royale. I thought it was a great balance between gritty realism and the camp that I love from Bond.
I don't think it's camp, but I really like it.
I'm,
like,
just saying the camp of we need to stop this international terrorist through a poker game.
Are lower.
Yeah, I think you can have low. I don't think that's camp. I think that's just a lower stake.
Yeah, I think that's just classy and, like, it's just that classy old spy vibe of, like, you have to do the scene.
Yeah.
You need to
You have to, like, complete the challenge, basically.
Yeah. But then they have that scene where, like, the special thing about the car was that it had a fucking defib in it when he
I liked that
the prop car.
Yeah.
I liked that. I liked the fact that the Bond girl Vesper. I appreciate the fact that when she shot someone, she had killed them. She had what I would think to be a very genuine human emotional response to taking another life.
That's an amazing performance.
Which was to crumble.
Anna Green's terrific in it.
Vesper
breaks your heart.
Yeah. I think, honestly, like, Sean Connery is probably my favorite movie Bond, I think. But I feel that Timothy Dalton is closest to what I imagine Bond from the books being like, which is to say, like, because Timothy... Or,
super fucking
Bond. Right, well, because Sean Connery... Because Sean Connery's also a little, like... He's a little, like
smarmy.
Lower class, I feel like.
He is, and he's like a gorilla of a man.
Yeah, Timothy Dalton feels more like something who went to finishing school and, like, had, like, very wealthy parents.
Yeah.
And, like, rose up through this, like,
well,
to
and
be
he's
that.
Taking it more seriously, right? He's not being so much of a boy about it.
Well, Sean Connery varies from movie to movie.
Plus, it's very hard to unsee Zardoz.
That's true. It's hard not to imagine James Bond wearing, like, a red diaper.
I would just like to take a break from this and throw this to Why Watch, Brendan, with the question of, would you like to take us into looking to score?
Well, I will real quick. I think the biggest... So there are a couple of points in music that I think we all want to touch on, but I think the biggest part of score of the Bond movie comes through the title songs. I don't know if I would say that Die Another Day is the worst Bond song.
It's not good,
like,
though.
It's a terrible song,
which
to be
one?
Fair.
What other one?
What is
terrible?
Worse than this
Writing
one?
Writing on the Wall, maybe?
Writing on the Wall. I would also say that...
What is that for?
Spectre. It's the Sam Smith
poem.
I feel like it's...
Sorry.
I would also say that the Moonraker song is bad.
See, I feel like there are a lot of Roger Moore songs were, like, very sappy Light FM ballads.
Yes.
And I feel like... I don't think The Man with the Golden Gun is a good song. I like Nobody Does It Better.
Mm. I like Nobody Does It Better.
That one.
Half as good as...
Yes. But I feel like a lot of, like, All Time High... and stuff like that are not very good songs. Like, so...
Yeah. Living Daylights.
Yeah.
80s, I like great time for music.
I love Living Daylights.
Great time for Bond songs.
Yeah. The
80s, what did you say?
80s Bond songs.
80s, great time for music.
Yeah.
Great time
you,
for Bond songs.
Yeah, you kill
yeah.
Living Daylights.
By the way, and this is going to sound crazy, but I unironically love View to a Kill.
No, I think that's a good song.
Living Daylights.
The problem, so the Madonna song
is terrible.
It's terrible.
I don't even think this is a song. This is like a chant.
But it also feels as if every fifth syllable of the words are taken out because it's always like die.
Well, here's my fucking problem. How could someone? I'm like almost angry when I think about that. How can someone like Madonna allow this? Like, how can someone with this much talent and integrity, that like, we know that she's a good artist.
Yeah.
We know that she can. How can she, like, let herself or allow herself to stick to
do such
game?
A garbage song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But remember, it wasn't that long before this that she did another shitty song for Austin Powers.
Beautiful Stranger?
Yeah.
I like Beautiful Stranger.
I thought it was just okay.
Like, it's not, like, I'm not saying it's her greatest song, but I think it's a fine song.
Yeah.
My point with this song is that, like, look at the lyrics at some point also, because to be fair, like, the song is apathy. The lyrics are, I guess I'll die another day.
Yeah.
She's not even excited about the possibility that she might live. Like,
yeah.
I guess. Like, apathy is not an exciting emotion for a Bond song.
Can we also just talk about my least favorite part of the Madonna song?
What?
Sigmund Freud.
Yeah, analyze this. If you listen to the full, like, the full-length, like, album version of the song, there's another spoken interlude where it's like, guess I'll die another day, and she goes, I have to lie down, or something. So it literally sounds like Madonna got to the studio, like, at 5 in the morning. They're like, Madonna, you have to record this song. She's like, I guess I'll die another day. Guys, I gotta fucking take a nap.
I really need to sleep.
It's going in.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Guys, we gotta throw it all in. There's not a song in here.
Compare this to, like, Sam Smith, right?
Yeah.
All of Sam Smith's shit sounds like that. Like,
that's
Sam Smith's just a terrible garbage
artist. Yeah, to be
artist.
Fair, like, when they said that Sam Smith was doing a Bond song, like, this is the Bond song you expect Sam Smith would do.
Yeah.
Like, it's a weepy, like, falsetto-laced,
very, very piano.
Whereas this is just, like, I don't understand. I'm not familiar with, like, later Madonna stuff, so I don't really track her career.
She's been
like,
through so many phases.
Well, yeah, she varies in quality, I think, is the thing. Is like, she can do very good songs, but she can also do, like, meh. Like,
which by the way, is going to happen when you have a career that spans that long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe this is just, like, me being, like, a little pain in the ass, but, like, I feel like if you're writing, like, a James Bond song, like, you might want to try.
You might want to put your back into it.
Because I remember, like, whenever Sam, like,
was this
reading,
her trying, though, do you think? Or do you think it wasn't?
I don't think she was trying for this. I honestly don't.
Like, even...
Because, well, again, also, there's another, like, co-writer on the song. I don't know who it is. I can't remember the person's name, because it's not a name that I remember. But, like, I remember when Sam Smith did Writings on the Wall for Spectre, and he literally said something like, I wrote this in 30 minutes. Like, that's a thing you can say if you've done, like, an amazing work of art. If you've done, like, a shitty song, you don't want to say, like, oh, this took 30 minutes to write. People will say, like, oh, maybe you should have spent, like, 45 minutes
but
on this or something.
But, like, even Quantum of Solace, which I think is sort of a dull movie, had a great song.
I don't think Quantum of Solace is great, but I don't
think it's
as much
okay.
As a
it's
lot
better
of
than
I love the song for that.
My favorite part of the Quantum of Solace song is, like, whenever there's a musical interlude where there's, like, a guitar sting where it's like, and then you hear Alicia Keys be like, ugh. It sounds for all the world like she's been shocked by, like, an electric current. And it's just like,
I don't know. I really like that song a lot.
That one's a little atonal for me. It's da 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 da. That's not a song.
My assorted colleagues, do we have anything else we want to stick in about this movie?
Nah.
No, it's a disappointing, given the fact that this was hyped as sort of an anniversary for Bond,
mm-hmm.
It's a tremendous disappointment in that respect. Because, like, again, as I said, it is not like, if this was like the Batman and Robin of James Bond movies, it would at least be fascinating to watch, but it's not.
All right, so with that said, who would like to lead us off with a fix?
I can go first this time.
Lee, please.
When I was thinking about this movie and what I like about Bond movies, I think the best Bond movies have the most, maybe the ones that I like the most have the most personal stakes involved. So I was thinking about, like, GoldenEye, and how in GoldenEye it's like, oh, he, like, had this sort of friend spy who, like, he let down and thought was dead, and like that, it sort of feels like personal in that sense because that spy was defected to the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the personal stakes are obvious because he's like falling in love with his wife who instantly gets killed. Spoilers. And Skyfall, where the personal stakes are like his connection to M.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was thinking about this movie, I think the good thing that about this movie where you could get some good personal stakes are this idea that, like, there was this sort of botched or sabotaged mission in North Korea, and maybe it could be botched, like, maybe it is his fault. But whatever, it ends up with him being tortured and for, like, a long time and then being traded. But then coming back to the UK as, like, oh, you're not allowed to be a spy anymore because you're compromised and you, like, some information was leaked and it was probably you and you just don't remember it and you were too fucked up to remember it. Hmm. And I feel like this is it's a good opening for, like, either a redemption arc or, like, a sort of, like, proving himself again arc of, like, because he's been... The being a spy has been, like, taken away from him, and he has to, like, reclaim his, either prove that he didn't do that thing, or redeem the thing he did do. And maybe it doesn't matter whether or not he did anything bad.
Right.
Like, maybe it's just about him, like, getting back who he is, and coming back to being a spy. When it comes to, like, flat characters like Bond and Sherlock Holmes, the pieces of fiction that I like the most about them are the ones that get into... that make them a bit less flat. I'm not a big fan of flat characters. I understand that they serve a purpose because it's like Sherlock Holmes is just there to solve mysteries and Bond is there to like fuck some girls and
yeah,
you know, blow up some shit. I do like the shreds of personality that you get and like the personal stakes that you get from them. So like I'm all about putting more of them in.
Okay. So like I said earlier, when I was trying to think about how this movie could be better, I was really going two ways. Like, one way, like I said, would be to make, like, the best, worst James Bond movie. And the other way would be to sort of, like, make it a legitimately good movie. And I thought that more people here would be trying to make legitimately good. So I was like, how would I make it just ridiculous? So I was sort of like, I think, like, the biggest takeaway you can sort of get from watching a movie like this is to, like, what parts of this movie are interesting to you and to sort of work with that. And like I said earlier, like, I kind of like the relationship between, like, the two, like, the North Korean, like, the general and the colonel, what their relationship is, and I was debating for a while trying to, like, fit North Korea into it, and it simply was not working for me because, like Lee said, it is too, like, real for me to put into a ridiculous James Bond concept.
Right.
And so the one thing that I think I sort of took away from this that I liked was the idea that James Bond comes out of this situation in North Korea changed. And, like, I think Lee did a little bit with the idea that James Bond comes out, he thinks that he's failed in some way and has to redeem himself. I was wondering for a while if it would be something maybe like James Bond comes out of North Korea and because of the torture inflicted upon him, he legitimately does not know like what he did and he's second guessing himself all the time on everything. And so the thing I sort of hit upon was to focus more on the idea that so the opening sequence I have in my mind, there will be a ridiculous henchman. I have not decided what his deal is. I don't think he'll be Diamond Face, unfortunately. But there's an opening sequence in Australia with this henchman. Bond is captured and tortured through scorpion poison by this henchman. He's rescued by MI6. They reveal he's been badly poisoned by scorpion venom and does not have long to live. Bond decides to look for a cure in Greenland, where rumors persist that reclusive millionaire, who is also handsome, Gustav Graves, is conducting gene therapy experiments with his beautiful assistant Miranda Frost, and that there's some sort of cure for his condition there. So Jinx, a CIA agent, is also secretly investigating Graves, and they run into each other while they're up there. Graves is secretly conducting gene therapy to create a race of genetically perfect humans to conquer the world. She's been experimenting on himself also. The dream machine factors into this because during his experiments, he has altered his brain to the point that he cannot sleep, and the dream machine helps him sort out his thoughts at the end of every day. We find out later on that Jinx is secretly allied with Graves. Frost is actually not allied with Graves, and she is MI6. This revelation comes later on that it doesn't die another day. Graves reveals that he had his henchman poison Bond to lure him to his lair so that he could use Bond's DNA to make his super soldiers. Frost fights bad Jinx and henchmen at the same time and kills them both. Graves is killed by Bond with his dream machine, which scrambles his brain and drives him to insanity and destroys him, just as Bond starts to die. Frost enters as Bond fades to black. He is revived back at MI6 as Frost reveals that she saves Bond by a blood transfusion using Gustav Graves' altered DNA. Is Bond Graves? Is Bond still who he was? Cut to black end credits.
Awesome!
Dark,
wow.
Yeah, I just thought it would be sort of like ends with James Bond not knowing who he is anymore. Really.
I love it.
I'm gonna have to wing it. I think that a lot of the ideas we were all on the same wavelength for a lot of the notions while watching this movie on how to fix it. I don't think that it's beyond some sort of repair, but I think that I would probably take it into the more Daniel Craigie tone that you kind of get at the beginning of the movie. Brendan and Lee have already detailed, like, there is something interesting. You do have an opportunity to do, like, kind of a soft reboot of James Bond when you have him captured and imprisoned and tortured for such a long time. And plus, Pierce Brosnan looks pretty good with a beard. So I think that opportunity was missed in this movie, and I would have a movie built around, I guess it was in Skyfall, kind of rebuilt himself from scratch. And by the end of the film, like, he is James Bond once again in full glorious form. But this would be that kind of a movie where you strip away the trappings that make the character only to build them back up again stronger. I think that they completely missed that, you know, like 5 minutes after he escapes the hospital boat, he's clean shaven, he's ready to go, he's yeah. James Bond, he's yeah. completely back. You don't get any character arc for James Bond. I mean, you know, that's not atypical for these movies. He's kind of like one of those perfect, ideal characters in that way. But I think that they were on the cusp of a few interesting ideas here, and every single one was scrapped in favor of, like, kind of playing it safe.
So I'm going to go in a little bit of an opposite direction for my fix. It'll shock no one, I think, that I want to embrace the camp. Potential.
My monocle.
I want to embrace the camp potential. But here's one of my favorite video games ever is a game called No One Lives Forever, in which they sort of do a take slash send up slash homage of James Bond with sort of a gender flipped version of the character named Kate Archer, who is sort of the more sensible one dealing with a lot of these more gimmicky 60s groovy style like spy gadgets. And is, like, foiling a really insanely elaborate Soviet plot. I think if you pick up an extremely stylized take on the genre that way, you can keep a lot of the insanity that's already in this plot, including, like, a satellite that turns the sun into a laser and a dream machine and gene therapy and plastic surgery. If you imbue it with a lot of this sort of stylistic flair that's in there, I would just cast the character of Kate Archer, a, like, female British agent who's amazing and badass in this completely absurd spy world, and just run with that. Have fun, wink at the audience, make jokes. Don't take yourself seriously at any point, and just indulge in this, like, completely loony, like, fun, ridiculous, high-style affair. Anything else anyone has left to throw in this bonfire tonight?
There is a song called Beyond the Ice by Red Flag, which was a demo song written for this movie back when one of the working titles was Beyond the Ice. And it's not a great song, but it's a significantly better song. So look it up. It's on YouTube.
So Brendan likes it.
I love Beyond the Ice is a better yeah. name than Die Another Day.
It is. I think Beyond the Ice is kind of a neat, like, there's a neat sense to it. I kind of like, one of the things I want to do with mine also is why I started in, like, Australia, because I want to start in, like, a desert sort of place yeah. and then move to, like, a frozen place, because I like the idea of, like, fire and ice as a dichotomy.
Beyond the Ice sounds like an indie survival game.
Yeah.
It does.
It has a very different, like, yeah. ring to it than most James Bond titles. Yeah. So let's also all call our movies Beyond the Ice.
Okay. So everyone here present has to make a movie called Beyond the Ice. Yes. Agreed?
Agreed.
All right. Yeah, we'll do.
Would you recommend this movie?
I think you're just gonna watch it if you're gonna watch it. You're not. You know what I mean? Like, it's Bond. If you're gonna watch Bond movies, you're probably gonna watch.
If you're a completionist, you're gonna make it.
If you were just say someone you should watch a Bond movie, this would not be high on the list.
Good Lord, don't have this be anyone's first Bond.
Yeah,
movie.
It should. Yeah, this was someone's first Bond movie. Oh God. Yeah.
So actually, yeah. as a better question, if everyone could just tell me what is the first Bond movie you would suggest?
Oh, interesting. Like what you would recommend someone watch?
Yeah. So it's not even the best Bond movie, right? It's just where do you start?
I don't know that, like, this is for everyone, but, like, I mean, the first intro I had into Bond was, like, being in Walmart and seeing GoldenEye on, like, the N64 demo. And, like, all it was that beginning level where you start in the bathroom, which happens in the movie because he comes in through the bathroom vent.
Right.
Mm. But, like, I was in the vent and I couldn't figure out how to get out of the vent. I was like, why? Let me stop and play this game for a second. And even though, I barely got into the goddamn bathroom in the game, I was like, what is this? And then I found out that it was GoldenEye, and then eventually I was old enough to go to rent GoldenEye and see it. That was my first Bond movie, and I think it was, like, a really amazing gateway. Like, for sure, I saw that movie, and I was like, there's more Bond movies? And at the time, I don't think Tomorrow Never Die had come out. Like, I don't think that was even a thing yet.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad was like, oh, like, you want to watch, like, you chose to watch GoldenEye, so, like, let me show you Bond, like.
You can kind of jump
there's
around.
There's no continuity.
Yeah, it was, like, whatever I wanted to get from Massive Video down the street. And, like, I don't, five-year-olds are, no, I wasn't five, but, like, I didn't discern as a kid, so I watched all the, I probably thought The Ringer was, like, fine as, like, a 12-year-old. Like,
sure, yeah.
No, I don't see the problem. Like, lasers.
Hey, by the way, I still don't see the problem.
Where's the issue? GoldenEye will always be, like, the special movie to me. So I'm pretty biased in thinking that I think GoldenEye is, like, the gateway.
GoldenEye was the second one I saw. And that was definitely one I loved most as a kid. But the very first one I ever saw was Goldfinger. And I became obsessed. Not to follow a trend here, but I would also probably suggest Goldfinger as a great starting point. Because it sort of establishes that era of Bond. It's crazy, it's fun, it's ridiculous. And you can kind of see the evolution of the movies from there. Brendan?
I am more inclined to recommend a newer James Bond film just because, especially in some of the Connery ones, like, the sexism is really bad.
Yeah.
It does not hold up well.
No.
And some of the racism is not great, too.
Very present.
Fingers. Asian henchmen who are all yellow.
Terrible!
Ergoki loves them because they are gold-faced.
No, and what's the one in Japan? Never Seen Ever Again.
Oh, no.
You Only Live Twice.
Yeah.
Once as a white man and once in yellow face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sean Connery, this hulking Scottish man in yellow face, like, trying to pretend to be, like, a Japanese man.
With really, really bad makeup.
Yes.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, if I'm going to recommend an older James Bond movie, it might be on Her Majesty's Secret Service because I feel like that is the kind of story that modern moviegoers kind of expect.
Mm-hmm.
They expect a more personal story that's a little bit more serious and straight up. You know, you get the tragic beat at the end with his wife getting killed and spoilers. But I think GoldenEye is a really good place to start, and I think that, you know, Casino Royale is also a pretty good place to start. And he's finally paired with somebody, Vesper, who is actually his equal in just about every respect, and yeah, their relationship is very interesting to watch unfold.
Yeah. So, I'm from, like, a weird perspective here because, like, I'm trying to remember what my first Bond movie was, and I feel like I've seen bits and pieces, but, like, honestly, the first time I had really seen Bond movies was a couple of years ago on 4th of July when I bought the box set that we have in front of us right now because I had just gone through a breakup and I was at the Best Buy at Fenway and I was like, I need something to take my mind off this, and this was on sale. I had never seen a James Bond movie in full.
Ever? I remember being, like, surprised.
Yeah, you were, because you were like, had you ever seen one of these before?
Yeah, I was like,
nope.
I've never seen Bond.
Brendan, I did not realize that.
Yeah, and so, like, I was just, it was on sale, and I was like, well, I'll just buy this box set and watch them all, which I later found out was what Matt Gourley had done that got him into James Bond.
Really?
Was that he slept with a woman, and then he was like, well, I'll watch all the James Bond movies to distract myself. And so, like, I think the first one I saw might have been GoldenEye, because I feel like when I got back and I wanted to watch a James Bond one, like, that was one that you wanted to see also.
Yeah.
So, like, that might have been the first one I saw. So, like, to be fair, again, like, we had also, like, we had said GoldenEye, I think, is a really good introduction to, like, a Bond that shows the line between, like, modern and, like, goofiness of old.
And it has all the tricks.
Yeah, it has gadgets.
Yeah.
It has goofy side characters.
It has all the tricks.
Boris.
Yes.
Boris.
Invincible.
Played by Uncoming.
Yes.
But it also gives you the two Bond girls, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have Natalia, who's kind of the more normal girl flavor, who can really, like, handle herself and is taking on a much more realistic tack. And then you have the sex cartoon.
Xenia on a top.
Xenia gets off on killing
or get it or dying or killing.
She's
killing.
Like, yeah, yeah. She's sexually aroused by killing people.
Yeah.
It's amazing performances in both ways.
Yeah, Famke Janssen's really fun in that movie.
Tremendous fun.
So, but aside from that, I also agree that On Her Majesty's Secret Service is a good starting point, and one of my favorite James Bond movies, I think. Diana Rigg is terrific in that movie, like, especially considering that she's a Bond girl from, like, the 60s when, like, Bond girls were just, like, either, like, slutty vamps or, like
yeah.
or, like, evil women, like...
She plays decently at being, like, an actual troubled girl.
Yeah, and I think she, like, they have a believable relationship, and she comes off as very smart and capable, and I love Diana Rigg, so I think she's
fantastic.
That. And I would also, again, say Casino Royale is a good starting point. It starts with a modern continuity. If you are more attuned to modern sensibilities, Casino Royale is a good place to jump in.
It's there
in.
For you.
You get Judi Dench. Yeah, yeah. You enjoy tweeting with your hashtags.
Yeah.
But yeah, any of those three I think are really great starting points. Personally, I don't care for Roger Moore, so I would not start with one of his.
I mean, they're sort of missable.
They're just like a new level of care. Like, you just have to watch them as like... As fun.
See, the thing that I have, though, is, like, some of them are, like, really campy entertaining, and some of them are just dull to me. Like, there are ones where it's just, like, there's nothing exciting is really happening in this movie.
No. Moonraker is top camp.
Yeah.
Top camp. I love Moonraker.
Top. Anyhow.
You can visit us at our website, drappack.com. You can find us on Facebook and... and at Twitter.
Facebook.com/YWatchPodcast. At YWatchPodcast on Twitter, which I have not used.
Sorry, guys. If you want to see a very dormant podcast, How do we buy this out in a James Bond way?
Bye-bye.
Guess I'll buy another day. Ha, 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 ha.